their baby right away, but Skirt was chomping at the bit. He wanted an entire clubhouse full of kids. Sunny and Patrick want to wait until they have a few more years of sobriety under their belts, which I respect them for. Completely. "Oh my God. Someone take this child," Dawn says, wobbling into the room with her daughter latched on her breast and Aiden gripped onto her leg. She's sliding him across the floor since he won't get off. The poor woman looks like she's about to pass out from exhaustion.
"Aiden! Leave your mom alone!"
Maisie shoves him, and Aiden falls right on his ass.
"You are such a brat!" "I'm not!"
Aiden tosses at her, then shoves her shoulder. Their fight reminds me of the little spat Tongue and I had yesterday.
"R2, you're a baby! You're a baby, Maisie! I'm rubber and you're glue. Whatever you say bounces off me and sticks you,"
Maisie sasses. I have to hold back a snort because she flips her dark hair over her shoulder and lays her hands on her hips in triumph. Sarah trudges into the main room next, her face pale. She's walking a bit slower and gripping her stomach. She and I might be on different pages right now, but I don't want to see her in pain. Her hair is up in a messy bun, and it looks like she hasn't slept in a week. "Maisie, Aiden, enough. I don't want to hear your bickering today. Go play in your room." Even though they just got into a spat, the kids run down the hall laughing, screaming, "You're it," as they disappear into Maisie's room. "Sarah, are you okay?" I ask, pushing myself off the couch. Tyrant and Yeti lift their heads and watch me as I walk over to her. She leans against the bar that hasn't been used since Patrick and Sunny came back from rehab. "Sarah," I lay a hand on her arm and the girls crowd around me. Sunny comes into the room next, a bowl of popcorn attached to her hip so we can marathon our show. We are all in need of some serious girl time. When she sees us, she sets the bowl on the bar top, then presses her hand against Sarah's forehead. Sarah and Sunny look similar in a lot of ways. Blonde hair, small frame. But while Sarah has brown eyes, Sunny's are blue. Her hair is a bit whiter, while Sarah's is more of a dirty blonde. Sunny has more color, too, a natural golden hue to her skin. "You're warm, Sarah. How long have you been feeling like this?" Sunny asks, brows drawn in concern. "It's nothing," she waves the issue away. "Honey, you don't look so good. I think we need to interrupt church," Dawn says, hissing as the baby latches onto her nipple harder. "I'm breastfeeding a vampire, I swear." Her face pinches in pain before Joey relaxes and stops sucking so hard. No, Reaper's been worried enough as is. I don't want him to worry. It's just a bad case of morning sickness. I've been really looking forward to this girl time." I worry my bottom lip, and Mary hands me my phone while we all think about what to do. I tuck it in my back pocket, then glance toward the closed church doors. No one can hear a thing anymore, not since Reaper soundproofed it. The only way to get their attention is to ring the doorbell he installed. "I agree with Sunny, Sarah. Are you in pain?" It's another big black cloud that hangs over our heads. She's a high-risk pregnancy after Tongue stabbed her. It was an accident, but still, she wouldn't be at such high risk if Tongue didn't stab her. My argument? Tongue wouldn't have stabbed her if he hadn't been in that position where the guys invaded his privacy, sending him into a whirlwind of bad memories and flashbacks. She cups the bottom of her stomach and hunches over, a muted cry leaving her lips as another wave hits her. "Oh my God, someone go get Reaper." "No, not again," she cries when she falls to her knees. Her hand won't leave the small swell. "No, please, no." Her broken sobs have tears pooling in my eyes. I fall to my knees, then rub small circles across her back to try and make her feel better. "I can't do this again. Oh my God," she screams, then flips to her back. She rests her head in my lap, and I swipe the hair off her damp face. "Nothing is going to happen to you," I tell her, then lay my hand on top of hers, protecting her unborn baby with her. "We won't allow it. It hurts so much," she wails, her big brown eyes bubbling with fat tears. "I'm losing her. I feel it. I'm losing her." She clenches her eyes shut, Another roar of pain escapes her. A deep, agonizing, guttural, shattering sound has a tear escaping me. I hate this for her. She can't lose this baby. Reaper and Sarah don't deserve that kind of pain, and I know Tongue will never forgive himself if she does. He already wakes up in cold sweats at night when he dreams of stabbing her. A girl? I try to take her mind off the pain. How do you know? I just feel it. I can't have this happen. I can't. Melissa and Sunny bang on the church doors, yelling for someone to answer. Ring the bell, remember? He soundproofed it last week, I remind them. I have no idea what to say to Sarah. Nothing can take this fear from her. All I can do is be here. Sarah digs her cheek into my leg and her arm curls up against my thigh. Her nails dig in against my skin, right where the hem of my pajama shorts ends. It's okay. Reaper will be here soon. Doc will take care of you, I tell her, trying to soothe her the best I can. I pet her cheek to dry the tears, but they are coming too fast.
What is it?
Badge snaps at the girls when he opens the door. He sure is an asshole on most days, but he's there when it matters. His eyes widen when he sees Sarah on the floor.
Reaper! Doc, it's Sarah!
Melissa and Sunny move out of the way just in time before the heavy boom, boom, boom of boots stampedes toward us.
Sarah, doll, fuck, what happened? What is it?
Reaper slides his arm under her and moves her from my lap to his. He sets his sights on her belly and his left palm swims over his child, his fingers curling over the bump. Sarah takes his fingers in hers.
No, he chokes. No, it isn't the baby. Please tell me it isn't the baby.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Shh.
He blinks back tears. The badass president embraces his emotions, not giving a damn if any of us witnesses him break.
It's okay. We will get through it. We always do. Hey, Sarah.
Doc kneels beside her, just as Tongue watches from the church doorway. His eyes are wide, and he is frozen in fear seeing Sarah on the ground like this.
What's going on? Talk to me.
He rolls her to her side and checks out her rear, but not sexually. With a slow, timid motion, he places her on her back again.
It hurts, she whimpers. So bad. I almost can't breathe.
Well, you aren't bleeding. I didn't see any blood, which is a good thing, but I need to get you downstairs so I can do a full evaluation. I think it's what we talked about before, remember? Your muscle in your abdomen didn't get a chance to properly heal. It's scarred and stretched thin. It's weak. You're growing, which is stretching that muscle. That's the cause of the pain.
I'm not having a miscarriage? She asks, hopefully.
Really?
Reaper smiles and starts to laugh, but the laugh falls short when it morphs into a choked sob.
You're sure? I won't be positive until we get her down there. Pick her up and follow me?
Reaper's hope flees. He gives a solemn nod as he carefully holds Sarah to his chest, one arm wrapped around her shoulders while the other is tucked under her legs. When he stands, Sarah moans in pain and he kisses her forehead.
I'm sorry, doll. I'm so sorry.
Reaper and Doc leave the room, their boots echoing loudly. And then everyone around us is silent.
Tongue, don't blame yourself.
Poodle starts, noticing how Tongue is frozen in one spot.
Tongue.
Poodle reaches out to comfort him, but Tongue shrugs it away.
You can't blame yourself anymore,
Slingshot adds.
It was a horrible accident. You didn't do it on purpose. Give yourself a break. She's going to be okay. You don't know that,
Tongue replies, swallowing so hard I can hear the gulp from across the room.
It's scary, and I know you feel guilty, but you gotta learn to let go.
Tool glides over to Juliet and wraps an arm around her shoulder. We all quietly gather in the main room, not knowing what we can do. We want to help, but how can we make a difference?
Learn to let go,
Tongue growls.
Learn to let go,
he repeats, slamming his fist against the wall. Poodle leans against the couch and opens his arms for Melissa, who eagerly runs into them. All the men pair up with their ladies, but Sunny walks to Patrick so he doesn't have to go near the bar and sits on the couch next to him.
It's easy for you to say. You don't have to live with the guilt of knowing she lost her second child and the reason is because of you. Don't sit there and tell me everything is going to be okay. Nothing is going to be okay. This isn't fucking okay. I need...
Tongue starts rambling. His nerves are getting the best of him.
I need to go.
Tongue fishes his keys from his pocket. They jingle, a sound I don't want to hear, especially when it's punctuated by a heavy crack of thunder rolling in the sky, shaking the foundation of the clubhouse.
I'm going to go.
I get up from the floor and brush my butt in habit. I walk toward him, and for the first time in our relationship, he holds up a hand to stop me from coming closer.
I need some time, Comet. I need to be alone. I love you, but I can't be here right now.
He says, his voice breaking. The haunted expression in his chocolate brown eyes will be an image I'll never be able to forget. He brushes by me. The electricity crackles across our skin like it always does when we are near one another. Everyone watches him leave. He opens the door, and even from where I'm standing, I can see the gray skies looming in the distance. The kiss of rain pecks against the room, dripping off the edge onto the porch steps. Tongue doesn't care. He takes his leather jacket off the knob against the wall that's dedicated for him. All members have one. He doesn't put it on. He hangs it over his shoulder as he slams the door behind him. He must jump down the steps because I can't hear him pound down the wood like usual. A grumble cuts through the white noise of rain and pulls away, idling when he gets to the gate where Braveheart is, along with Tank. My eyelids ease shut when I try to understand what just happened, but my heart is crushed. Tongue never denies me, and today his denial hit me right smack in the chest.
Don't take it too hard, Daphne. Tongue gets that way sometimes,
Poodle says, and I know he meant to calm me, but it doesn't work. If anything, I feel a giant need to stand up for Tongue. Don't tell me how he gets. Don't tell me how all of you know him and know what he is like. You don't know. You don't know anything about him, and that's your fault. All of you. I whip around and point a finger at each of them. Tool's brows rise in shock. Juliet can't bear to look at me, and Melissa is rubbing Poodle's chest. You paint him as the bad guy every day because he is so different. He's Tongue, right? He can't feel anything. He's just the guy you call to do the dirty work that you can't do. He's different, but he isn't a damn leper. He deserves more than what all of you give him. None of you have faith in him. Can't you see him? I yell, pointing toward the door, then hit the side of my head as if they are too dumb to realize the damage they are doing. Can't you see he needs more? He's different in the sense that he's learning life all over again, and no matter what I do, I can only put him together so many times before all of you break him again. He's more. He's fucking more. When the door opens again, I hold my breath, hoping Tongue has changed his mind. But it's the silver-haired man again. My hope deflates, shoulders sagging, and of course, Mercy's eyes are on me. And of course, Tongue isn't here when I need him most.
Reaper around, Whistler asks, coming around Mercy. We need to talk to him.
Sorry, he's busy right now with Sarah and Doc.
Everything okay?
Mercy's brows bend in concern as he shakes off his jacket. Water droplets fling and scatter along the floor.
Does it have to do with Tongue barreling out of here like a bat out of hell?
Mercy's eyes are making me uncomfortable, and I am too heated to deal with stares that are full of questions. The more he looks at me, the more familiar he becomes. And I don't like it. I need to get out of here, too. I just wish Tongue would have taken me with him. We could have ridden to the center of the storm together.
Chapter 10. The rain stinging me in the face is welcome after what I just witnessed. My cheeks are getting the brunt of the pain and my hands aren't gloved, so my knuckles are white and my fingers are cold. I deserve the pain. I need the rain to soak me to my bones to the point that I can't be wrung dry, to the point that my insides drown. I deserve that and so much more after seeing Sarah lying on the floor, cupping her stomach as she cried. Fear. Pain. Devastation. And it's all my fault. My bike fishtails along the road and water flings up from the back tire, spraying against my jacket and the back of my neck. The roads are foggy and the clouds are low. The blacktop is shining from blankets of rain and oil from the traffic. One wrong move and I could end up as buzzard food. I bet that would be a welcome relief to some. No one would have to worry about me anymore. Daphne would be okay. She'd move on. She'd find someone better. Someone who can love her without the harmful tendencies my love brings. A car horn honks and headlights shine in my face. I've swerved to the other lane and the massive semi-truck barrels forward since he can't exactly slam on the brakes. The grill is silver and the logo in the middle starts with a P. If I can see that, then shit is about to get messy. I jerk my handlebars to the right, the blowhorn of the truck ringing in my ear. I get in my own lane, and out of the corner of my eye, I see the driver lift his hand out of the window in a what-the-fuck gesture. My heart sledgehammers against my chest, and my breath leaves my lips in an icy cloud. Holy shit, I nearly died. I could have not moved. I could have let the truck hit me and leave me in unrecognizable pieces along the highway. But Daphne's face, Daphne's love, she's what had me jerk the handlebars at the last minute. I'd regret dying because I'd miss her. She's the only thing keeping me alive. If it weren't for her, I think I might have become a nomad eventually. And that life is a rough one. Eventually, something would kill me, but at least it would be on my own terms and away from judgment. Hell, my own club members don't even like me. They're Slingshot, but I don't know if he likes me or just deals with me. Cue the smallest violin and let the devil play it on my shoulder. Then let me dance in the flames of my woe-is-me self-pity party. I pass a yellow road sign and exhale my stress as I get further away from the club. The darkness hides the mountains in the distance, but they surround me. A perfect place for a man to escape and live off the land for a few days. But I can't leave Daphne alone. I'll bring her with me. Maybe we will get a cabin away from everyone and everything. We only need each other. As long as we have us, we will be okay. Eventually, I turn around on the road and start to head back to the clubhouse. I've been gone for a few hours, and I don't want Daphne to worry. The road back to the clubhouse is straight, long, and goes on for miles. It looks like the same going back as it did when I left. The asphalt is so dark it's nearly black, soaked through with rain. A white line on the right and a yellow in the middle to signal people can pass one another. My headlight shines against the road. Every now and then I see roadkill picked apart, probably by coyotes or buzzards. Another sign comes to view, only this time it's one made of wood and just as old as the building Zane lives in. Las Vegas Asylum, established 1907. Well, damn, look at that. I read it. I grin to myself and wish Daphne was next to me for us to celebrate. She always celebrates me. Every new word I can pronounce and sound out, every time she thinks I'm ready to upgrade to a more difficult book, she never fails to say how proud she is of me. Taking the next right following the sign, my bike bounces from the uneven terrain. I slow down to give my suspension a rest and coast over a few potholes. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. Something is pulling me into this direction. It's only fair if I give it a chance to see why. The bike comes to a rolling stop near a few cars. There's an old Lincoln Continental that has seen better days. The front end is still dented from when Porter smashed into Patrick and Sarah. I hate that motherfucker. I park my bike and take off my helmet, cross my arms, and just stare at the asylum front door. What am I doing here? Zane has done a good job of renovating the building while keeping its creeptastic nature. Some bricks are crumbled in certain places. He told me he found a cemetery not too far in the backyard from the Prohibition era. If that doesn't scream haunted, I don't know what does. Even over the hiss of rain peppering the ground, the squeak of the front door sounds over the droplets, and Zane is poking his head outside. His shiny, bald head reflects the porch light, and his narrow eyes narrow even further to try to figure out who I am. I can tell the moment he figures it out. He steps outside, and the screen door slams. He takes three steps to the new rail on the porch, folding his arms as he stares off into the desert. I push off the ground and make my way toward him, my boots sludging through the mud with a squelching sound.
"I can't say I'm surprised to see you here,"
he starts, turning his head to pin me with black eyes. "That goes for one of us. I'm surprised. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing." I take another look around the porch, impressed with how nice it looks compared to the slumping shitfest it was before. There's a swing on the far right side of the porch. I can imagine sitting there and watching the sunset, not with a beer in hand, but a cold sweet tea that really quenches the thirst. There are a few potted plants, and there is a small sign next to the door with Las Vegas Asylum engraved on it, as if this place is a bed and breakfast. Whatever tickles their crazy, I guess. I think you're here to talk to your brother. I grab him by the back of the shirt collar and throw him against the side of the house. Don't ever fucking call him that again or I'll kill you.
You won't fucking touch him.
Zane's old lady comes up to the other side of the screen door, a knife in hand.
Or I'll kill you.
I don't take kindly to threats, I warn her, my voice bordering on a threat.
I'm not asking you to,
she sneers. Zane lifts his hand up, telling us to stop.
Jessica, it's okay.
How do you know it's Jessica? I ask, sizing her up as she does the same to me.
Jessica is a bit more protective.
Chloe is a coward.
Be nice, Zane orders.
I will when he doesn't threaten you.
I'll stop threatening his life when he doesn't refer to Porter as my brother.
He is your brother.
Jessica tears her eyes away from me and stares at her nails. Her tone is as if she's bored out of her mind, just repeating the obvious. He isn't, I growl, slamming my fist against the side of the house. A piece of brick crumbles to the ground and lands on my boot. He is nothing to me.
Get over yourself.
She drags her eyes from inspecting her fingernails and lands those empty and emotionless abysses on mine. I don't like her.
He's your blood. And if he wasn't your brother, what are you doing here? Dropping by to say hi?
She snorts in disbelief.
Please, I bet there is a small part of you that wonders what he is like.
I know what he is like. She hums, unimpressed with my argument.
Then you know he's a lot like you, right?
She taps the door, and with a confident smirk, she turns around and walks away, heading toward the couch. She sits down next to a woman with blonde hair and a guy in a toga. That must be Apollo. She's a pain, I state honestly. Zane tosses his head back and laughs. Isn't she great? I fucking love that woman. He slaps his hand on my shoulder as he comes down from his joy. Tongue, can I talk to you about Porter? Maybe in some way you'll be able to see he isn't all bad. He didn't used to be. He's sick. Here. He taps the side of his head with his index finger. I mean, we all are, but Porter is different. His identity crisis is similar to Apollo's, but Apollo literally doesn't have another personality. Apollo is Apollo. I don't even know his real name. Porter? He thinks he does the world a favor getting rid of people like you, or people involved with you, because of his dad and mom. His mom was mine, remember? And what I remember of her, she wasn't bad. My parents were good to me. I think they were. I remember a few things, but I can't remember what they looked like. It's been too long, and I don't have any pictures of them. Life's unfair like that. I remember Mom making mac and cheese for me because I didn't like anything else as a kid. I remember her putting a Band-Aid on my knee and then kissing it better. I don't believe kisses make wounds better anymore, but I did as a kid. I just think you should talk to him. Maybe you could find some common ground. The only thing I could tell him is that if I ever saw him again outside of this asylum, if he ever roamed free, I'd kill him. I'd take my time. Not just for what he did to Sarah and Daphne, but Knives, too. I'll kill him. He's lucky Reaper hasn't asked for his death. I don't understand why. You don't know why? He asks in disbelief. Reaper hasn't killed Porter because Porter is your family, whether you want to admit it or not. You're more alike than you think. How many people have you killed? That's different. I did it for the club. Any kills that weren't club business? He asks. I freeze like a deer in headlights. I want to say there haven't been any, but that isn't true. I've lost count of how many people I've killed just because they have pissed me off. You're more alike than you think. Maybe talk to him and see what he is like. He's been on his medication and he's improved. I'm nothing like him, I say, trying to convince Zane, but it's a sad attempt to try to convince myself. Then leave, he says. If you aren't here for him, leave. I'm not here for him. I left the clubhouse to get some air and I wanted to come say hi. I don't see you leaving. He sits down on the swing and pushes off the ground with his feet to start to sway back and forth. Leave. Leaving is easy. I can leave. But my boots are stuck to the porch. I stare through the screen door. The black, sheer material fuzzes the inside of the asylum. From here, it looks like a real home on the inside. Wooden floors, coffee tables, a sectional couch facing the TV, decor up on the walls. It even smells like cinnamon candles are burning, giving a comforting aroma. All the scent does is cover up the crazy inside. I'm waiting, he says, stretching out his arm to show me the way out. It's pouring rain now, reminding me of static blaring from a TV that's turned up too loud. I'm going, I say, but I still don't move. I want to fucking move, but my brain and legs are not communicating. I don't want to be here. I want to go home to Daphne. I want to curl around her and lay the sharp edge of my knife against her skin, carve my name into the flawless flesh like I've always wanted. But all I can think about is Porter. Why does he do what he does? Why does he insist on hurting the ones I care about? Why does he hate me? He has no right to, especially when I have every reason to hate him after everything he has done. I'm not trying to form a brotherly bond, but I do want answers. I grab the silver lip of the handle and open the screen door. All I need to do is turn around and leave. All I need to do is stop giving a damn, but lately, seems I do give a damn, and I'm not liking it. I don't know how to process it. Just go inside and kill him. That's all it takes, and then I can never worry about him again. But he's my brother. Blood or not, my only family is Daphne. I don't need him. But I still find myself walking inside, stepping into the air conditioning. My skin goosebumps from the cold since I'm wet, and I shake my hair out, flinging water on the mirror to my right. Take off your boots. They have mud all over them and I just mopped the floor. If you ruin it, I'll make you clean it again. I roll my eyes and tug on my wet laces, then kick my boots off. Chloe likes the house a certain way. I turn around to see Zane closing the door behind us, and I want to ask how he really knows that's Chloe, but when you love someone, I guess you just know. Come on, follow me. I'll take you upstairs. Zane locks the door and then turns off the porch light. We're going to go see Porter. He is well today, Apollo says, flipping a page of a thick book that seems to be 1,000 pages. I'd die trying to read that. If he's related to me, he isn't well. I shrug off my jacket and hang it on the coat stand next to the shoe rack. Zane bends down and kisses the top of Chloe's head. I'll be back in a minute. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to make popcorn. You want some? The blonde rises from the couch and sniffles. Her eyes are red and puffy, and her hair is a tad bit greasy. Make loads, Zane says, licking his lips. I love popcorn. I'll help you, Goldie. A guy with stitch crossings across his lips lays a hand on her hip. Thanks, Zipper, she whispers. He stares at her adoringly. They don't kiss, but I can tell they want to. Why doesn't he just claim her, own her, show her who she belongs to? Instead, he guides her toward the kitchen and she wraps the baggy brown cardigan tight around her waist. Ready? Zane asks. I whip out my knife. It glitters in the light of the living room. As I'll ever be. Apollo sighs on the couch, then licks his finger before flipping a page. Violence fixes nothing, but love changes everything. Remember that, tongue. His voice is calm and calculated, with a tinge of boredom and annoyance that he had to give advice to me. Well, maybe violence should be my answer when love fails me, I snap. He closes his book and turns around, placing an arm on the back of the couch, then bends his knee as he lifts his leg from the floor. Do you choose to be oblivious? Or has oblivion chosen you? He asks. What the fuck? Maybe tell Daphne you said love fails. See what happens when her heart breaks. Love has not failed you. It has found you. But you choose violence instead. You will be the ruin of your own future. The destruction of love by using your violence will be your deepest regret. Come on, or Apollo will keep giving you words of wisdom to live by. See you in a minute, Apollo, Zane says, waving his hand as he walks away. I'll be here, and when I'm right, you'll thank me. Apollo spins around and opens his book again, places a finger on the page, then drags it just below the sentence as he reads. Interesting man. His words find a way to the inside of my head, and I think about them as I follow Zane down the hall. We take a right down a dark hallway. Apollo is right. Love hasn't failed me. It did a long time ago, but it hasn't now in the present. I might get what I want from others, but I get what I want and need from Daphne. Love failed me once, but damn it, it's brought me back to life. And the more time I spend with Daphne, the less bloodthirsty I become. It's hard to change the core of who I am when my core is damned and shredded. With one look, just by existing, Daphne is healing me from the inside out. Let's face it, the inside of me is way more fucked up than the outside of me will ever be. I keep my knife out and at the ready. I don't want Porter to try and get the best of me. Sorry, it smells like paint. We just painted the hallway a few days ago, and the fumes will not leave, even with the window open. These rooms are nice, I notice to my left. The metal doors to each room are open, and they don't look anything like the crazy room I imagined in my mind. They have big beds, hardwood floors, and fashionable rugs. They used to be the rooms the doctors kept patients in back in the 1900s. I figured I wanted every room as nice as it can be, just in case we get more people who need a place. I wanted it to feel like a home as much as possible. There are some areas that aren't cleaned up yet, but were used for the same purposes. Downstairs are the padded rooms, and the rooms upstairs are like the rooms here, but sparser. I don't trust Porter not to hurt himself. I don't know why you have faith in him. Zane stops climbing up the steps and looks over the meat of his shoulder. The same reason people have faith in you. People don't have faith in me. Faith isn't a real thing. They either trust or they don't. One person trusts me. Sometimes one person is all it takes, isn't it? One person to make you look at the world differently. Damn, this fucking crazy house. Everyone is twisting my words and throwing them back at me. I rub my hand through my wet hair, stopping on the steps just below the one Zane is on. Let's just go. I'm more confused than I have been in a long time. Do I give Porter a chance? Do I forgive him for everything he has done? I don't think I can. Burying me, coming after me, and attacking Daphne, I'll never forgive him. I'm going to go. This was a mistake. I pound down the steps and Porter's voice echoes down the hall, making me pause mid-step. Come on, Wayne. You've come all this way. He sounds so much like me, it unhinges me a little. I twist my body to the left and peer into the darkness above the staircase. There's a faint glow to the left down the hall, but it isn't enough to illuminate the staircase. I want to know how he knows about me, and I never knew about him. Despite my better judgment, I haul up the steps and grab the rail, swinging myself around to the left. Zane softly pads up the staircase behind me. The light flips on to my right, and Porter is there, sitting on his bed, reading a book. Reading a fucking book. Casually. The bastard. He learned to read, and here I am, struggling. Hey, baby brother, he greets me, shutting the book and placing it on the nightstand next to his bed. He stands, placing his hands on his thighs as he pushes off the bed. He strolls toward me, wearing a white t-shirt and black sweatpants that do not have strings to tighten around his hips. He'd probably strangle himself or find a way to strangle someone. He lays his hands on the glass. We stare at one another. We're about the same size, but I'm a little taller. His eyes are brown, and as I tilt my head, he tilts his in the same direction. We're too much alike. Oh, little brother, my, oh my, how I feel like I'm looking in the mirror. How are you doing? I slam my fist against the glass and curl my lip. You're doing good.
That's great. Me too. How's Daphne doing? She's a strong little thing. I'm happy for you to have found such a strong woman. Don't you dare say her name after what you've done. He lifts his hands off the glass, the heat from his palms leaving oily prints against the window. No harm. I am sorry for what I did, for what I've done. I hated you. I still kind of do, but I think it's because you got the life I never had. Got the life? I repeat back to him, stunned by what he thinks. You know nothing about my life, I roar, hitting the glass as hard as I can. Cracks like spiderwebs run along the surface. You have no idea what I went through. I did you a favor, he roars, banging his own head against the glass. He's rabid, untamed, and a primitive killer. Just like me. Fuck. We are alike. I stumble back and Zane catches me before I lose my footing. You did me a favor. What did you do? How did you know about me? I knew nothing about you. I go to charge again, but Zane holds me back. It's a failed attempt. I swing him off me without breaking a sweat. He hits the end of the hall, smacking his back against the wall. Porter pouts. Aw, tongue so mean, hurting the nice man. Careful. He's my friend. He sighs, lifting one leg and balancing on the other. He stuffs his hands in his pockets and whistles. I guess we deserve to know each other, don't we? Since we will be seeing so much of each other soon. He drops his leg to the floor, then sits down, cross-legged, right in front of the window. I could punch it one time and tackle him, kill him like he deserves to be killed. But then I think of Reaper and why he has been keeping Porter alive. It isn't because he doesn't want to kill him. He chooses not to. For me. Maybe he cares about me after all. Sorry, Zane, I whisper, throwing the man a bone. I'm staying here to make sure you guys don't kill each other. Porter is my friend. Hear that? Porter puffs out his chest, then jabs his finger in the middle of it. I am someone's friend. You'll never be mine, I sneer. Oh, he scoffs. You wound me. But there, I see it. The flash of vulnerability that he and I both seem to hide so well. What's beneath the violence, Porter? And why do I fucking care all of a sudden? Chapter 11. I sit down on the floor wishing I had something to drink in my hand. I want hard whiskey, the cheap kind, the kind that burns and unsettles my stomach, the kind that rips apart the back of my throat. Sipping something smooth and expensive is enjoyable, and this moment is not. I mirror his position, right on the other side of the barrier. What would life have been like if we hadn't been brought into the life we were dealt? What if I could have had a brother, and he could have been there for me? What if he existed and my uncle never touched me? Would I be the same man I am today? What if we had grown up together and were close? All the what-ifs that don't matter because now we are on opposite sides of the glass. Porter, stop with the taunting and just talk, Zane warns as he walks behind me. I'm going downstairs. Hopefully, if you guys fight, you kill each other so I don't have to worry about killing the one that lives. His footsteps are quiet since he is barefoot and the stairs creak as he walks down the steps. I lay the knife next to my leg. Porter follows the movement, then grins when he sees it. Well, I'm proud. Little brother comes prepared. Stop calling me that. We both know you hate me just like I hate you. The mockery on his face is gone, and I'm not sure if I believe his sincerity. I did hate you for a really long time. I wanted to take from you, Wayne. I wanted to take until nothing was left for you to live for. I was jealous. So damn jealous and mad at you. Mad at you for existing. Mad at you for not knowing you. And mad at her. He doesn't look away from me as he starts to speak. Her? I ask, watching an orange tabby cat jump from the top of the dresser in his room and onto the floor. The furball struts toward Porter and purrs, rubbing his body against his side. He scratches under the cat's chin. Our mother. I don't remember much of her. Good. She was a lying whore. There isn't much to know.
I banged my fist against the glass again, causing another crack. You don't know what you're talking about. She was a good mom. She was with my old man for a long time, you know. The president of an MC. She was one of his whores at first. You don't know what you're talking about. Like I'd ever tell you a lie. The truth always hurts more than a lie ever does, baby brother. I grip my teeth, and any good memories of her I had start to tarnish. I don't remember her much. She died when I was young.
I know.
I killed her and your dad, he says nonchalantly, leaning back on his hands. The blood drains from my face and my hand curls around the knife. What did you just say?
That little accident you were in. All of you were supposed to die, but only she did, and that man, my father.
I slam my shoulder against the glass. The damn thing holds more than I expect it to. I try again and again. Thud, thud, thud. But it won't give. He was a good man.
Wayne, do you know nothing of them?
He scoots closer to the glass. My mind is whirling from the shock of his words. He has to be wrong. I know my parents. I know. Fucking damn it, I don't know anything.
Your mom married my dad and got pregnant with me. They lived happily ever after for a while. Dad was a real asshole and hit me every chance he got. She fucked around a bit. Dad didn't care if she slept with other members. She got passed around. Then Dad died on a club run, and she finally took that as the escape she needed, so she left. She left me behind. Me, her own son, to start another family. And then you came along.
He curls his lip in disgust.
I followed up with her the best I could, watching this family build themselves in suburbia.
I don't remember living in the suburbs. I don't remember much before my uncle. It doesn't sound like the kind of life I'd live. Look at me. I don't look like I mow the lawn every Sunday and play golf with the guys every Wednesday.
Come to find out, your dad wasn't so straight and narrow. He loved drugs. He worked for a cartel, smuggling all sorts of good stuff over the borders, which the MC loved, by the way. Our mom knew.
He continues to pet the cat with gentle strokes. I expect him to stop and to wrap his arm around the cat's throat and choke it to death, but he doesn't. He seems as though he loves the cat. I didn't think such evil was capable of such a thing, but I suppose the same could be said of me.
I came to visit once.
I jerk my head up from where I was staring at the cat, fighting tears of anger. Nothing else. If this fucking glass wasn't in my way, I'd kill him.
What?
Yeah, it's what kind of made me spiral out of control. You're lying. Mom would have never let you leave. She would have welcomed you.
Tell me, Wayne. What do you remember of Mom?
He folds his hands in his lap.
I want to know. You were a kid. I'm a little older than you, remember? I think I know more.
As much as I want to argue with him, he is right. Gritting my teeth until they might crack, I study the groove in the wood framing the window. Rings upon rings, which tell me the wood they used is older. It's a beautiful piece of wood.
You don't remember much, do you? And what you do remember, I bet, if you're wondering if you've made it all up in your head.
Listen, baby brother, don't call me that. You don't give a fuck about me being your brother.
I didn't used to. I had a vendetta to grind, that's for sure. I've had a lot of time to think in here.
Zane makes me take my medication, and I've leveled out.
I'm not perfect, but I'd like to try.
You said you visited. I force him to change the subject. I'm not trying to get emotional with him when he is nothing but a liar. He seems hurt that I don't want him to continue his confession, but it would fall on deaf ears. He nods and clears his throat.
I did. I had been watching you guys for some time, and I decided I wanted answers, the same way you want answers now. I wanted to meet my baby brother.
He gives a low chuckle as he stretches his neck to the side.
Don't look so surprised. I wasn't always like this. I knocked on the door and no one answered, but I heard you crying. You were fucking wailing. So I checked the knob and it was unlocked.
Man, you lived in this typical fancy rich house, two stories, white picket fence, the works. I still find that hard to believe.
Anyway, I turned the knob and I let myself in. It was unlocked because every person leaves their house unlocked when you're in a safe neighborhood. You were in the middle of the floor, dirty, like you hadn't bathed in days. You had a diaper on, even though you were too old for one. The house reeked of meth, and you were probably crying because of the drug you were inhaling. I saw that and realized I had all the answers I needed, especially when I saw them passed out on the couch, naked. They couldn't even hear you. I went to take you, you know. I was going to get you out of there. I had no idea what kind of life I could give you, but it had to be better than the one you were living. A neighbor came over and caught me and threatened to call the cops. I had to get out of there. I regretted it for a long time, but then the regret turned to hate. This deep hatred. I blamed you for ruining her. I probably did. I ruin everything I touch. I had to kill them for so many reasons. Her for turning her back on me, him for corrupting her, you for being involved, and because it was the only way to save you. I found you there and thought, I can still save him. I can still figure out how to bring him peace. Peace, I choke out. You have no idea what your actions did to me and what kind of life I lived after that. Maybe they were everything you said they were, but at least they weren't my uncle, who I had to go live with, by the way. I shout at him, slamming my hand against the glass again. Even though it is cracked, it still won't budge. Do you know what he did to me? I hit the glass again, wishing it was the memories I could shatter, then rip my shirt off and spread out my arms. He burned me with cigarettes. He scarred my tongue. He raped me. I roar in a broken, guttural shout. I ball up my fist and punch air, causing a crack in the glass to spread further, over and over and over, and then again. With every word, I slam my fist into the glass, throwing my whole weight into it. Images of everything Justine did to me send fear clawing through my gut. I get up off my knees and slam my entire body against the glass wall. It shakes in an empty vibration from the weight of me, but doesn't allow me inside to strangle Porter. I wish you would have killed me in that accident. I wish you would have. Wayne, he gets up off the floor and shakes his head. I'm not perfect. I never claimed to be. I've done fucked up, unforgivable things. I never expect you to trust me. I never expect you to be my baby brother, but I want you to know I'm trying here. I didn't know about your uncle. I'm sorry. Sorry doesn't fix the years of damage he did to me. You will never know the extent of it. My phone dings and I dig it out of my pocket, blinking back the damn tears from everything he just told me. I don't know how to handle it. It's Daphne. She sent me an audio message. Wayne, please. Both hands are against the glass and his brows are pinched as a sorrowful expression takes over his face. I am sorry. I am. I don't believe anything you say. Daphne sent me a message. 1 minute. I press play and the tone hidden in her voice has my hackles raised. I bend over and pick up my knife and sheathe it in the holster on my pants.
Tongue, please come home. Mercy is here talking to Reaper, but I don't like how he is looking at me. He's doing it again. Please, I love you, and next time you run off, take me with you. You know I don't like to be away from you.
The message ends. I want to replay it again and again to hear her voice. All of the discomfort, all of the pain I felt, wishing I died when my parents did, all goes away. Nothing Porter says matters to me. His truth hurts, but what's done is done. I can't change anything. And while he says it's the truth, he could be playing me like a fucking violin for all I know. I press reply and hold down the button. I'll be there soon, Comet. I'm sorry. I love you too. Aw, baby brother in love is sweet. Daphne is a real peach, strong and resilient. You got lucky. The way he says her name pisses me off, and that fuel I needed to break the glass ignites in my veins. I slam my body against the glass one more time, and it shatters, finally. Heavy, broken pieces fall across us as I tackle him to the floor. I can feel the pieces digging into my arms and hands. I wrap my hands around Porter's throat and squeeze. Don't you fucking dare speak her name again. I lift one hand, clench my fist, and punch him in the face. I fucking hate you. You think this changes anything? Do you? I pick him up by the material of his shirt and slam him against the floor, his head hitting with a hard crack. You find ways to ruin my life. I'm fucking done with you. You hear me? No more curiosity, no more nothing. We are done here. You hear me? Fucking done. I wrap the hand I just used to punch him around his throat again and squeeze. And he just lies there. He isn't fighting back, he's taking it. Fight me. No. I said fight me. I slam him on the floor again and a few broken pieces of glass skid against the floor. No. I've been fighting you too long. I'm done. You weren't allowed to be done. I shake him so hard his teeth clank together. Fuck, Tongue, get off him, get off! Zane yells, grabbing one of my arms while Zipper grabs the other. The only reason they can get me off Porter is because I'm too fucking high-strung right now. I'm shaking all over. What the hell, Tongue? Keep him away from me. I rip my arms from their hold, and without giving anyone a second look, I fly down the steps, not caring about the glass in my arms. So many things are running through my mind. The first thing is, why didn't I kill him? I've killed for so much less, and yet I can't find it in me to kill him. I slip my boots on at the door and leave them unlaced. Bye, Chloe or Jessica or whatever the fuck her name is says. I don't bother saying goodbye in return. I take my jacket off the hook, shrug it on, and head out the door, slamming it shut. It's still fucking raining, but I don't care. I want the storm to wash away whatever the hell is wrong with me, because I feel like I'm drowning. Either wash me away or set me free. I can't swim like this anymore. Tossing one leg over my bike, I crank it, then slide my helmet on. I don't bother buckling it under my chin. I fly out of the lot, slinging mud all over their car as I leave. I probably did the damn thing a favor. The bike slips across the wet sand. It takes some direction to make sure she doesn't topple over. When I get to the end of the dirt road, I don't even stop. I crank the throttle and speed down the road. I'm about 10 minutes from the clubhouse. The only thing I have to do is make it back in one piece. For Daphne. The rain screams, echoing the sounds of a banshee in agony. The wind cuts across to the left, and my bike dances with it for a second before I ride it. The driveway to the clubhouse is hard to see this late, but muscle memory takes over as I flip on my blinker and head down the road. Reaper finally fixed all the damn potholes. Not that the fix will matter after this storm. The damn potholes will be back. When I get to the gate, Braveheart sees who it is and lets me in immediately. Poor kid. He needs to be inside where it is warm, but he refuses to leave his post. He gives me a wave, and I head under the awning where all the bikes are parked to get them out of the rain. I cut the engine off, already missing the vibration between my legs as they tingle. I take my helmet off and place it on the seat as I dismount. I pass Mercy's bike and glare at it, wishing I was disrespectful enough to kick it over so it hits the ground, maybe breaking his mirror. Maybe I'll put sugar or sand in his gas tank one day. I'll just have to wait and see how I feel after I figure out what he wants with my Comet. I dig my boots into the steps, pounding up them until I get to the front door. I shake my hair out and wipe my boots on the welcome mat, and then pull my jacket off. I shake the leather out, too, so I don't drip water all over the floor, then bang on the door so someone lets me in. The small window opens in the middle of the door, and Slingshot's eyes widen when he sees me. When he opens the door, he throws himself at me, wrapping me in a hug. Man, where the hell have you been? Do you know how worried we were? He pulls back and analyzes my face. Why are you bleeding? What happened? Why didn't you text me? Who are we killing? Did you kill them already? Do you need help burying the body? He throws question after question at me, but there is only one person I'm interested in talking to tonight, and she's on the couch, reading a book with her legs tucked under her. I scan the couch to see what the problem is, and there is Mercy, sitting there, ankle crossed over the other knee, and his sights are set on her. Again. I push Slingshot to the side and take a step forward, bringing in mud and rain. Daphne unsticks her nose from the book when she hears the pound of boots against the floor. Her eyes light up and her shoulders deflate like the weight of the world is lifted off her shoulders. Mercy doesn't even notice me. I don't like that he is studying her. He scoots across the sofa to get closer and leans in to Daphne. I can't hear what he says, but it has her sliding her legs out from under herself and trying to scoot over. And then his hand lands on her bicep. Her blue eyes land on mine and are as big as the moon. She has no idea what to do. But I do. I push by Skirt next, careful not to hit him too hard since Dawn is in front of him holding Joey. I shove Patrick aside and his glass of water drops from his hands. It clatters to the ground, spilling water all over his shoes. What the fuck, Tongue? Patrick asks with a hint of annoyance as he wipes his hands on his jeans. I march toward the sofa and snag Mercy's wrist from her arm, then bend it back to the edge of a break. Ah, fuck! He screams. He stands as I yank him to his feet, and when he tries to use his other hand to hit me, I'm too quick with my knife. I slide it out of my sheath and plunge it through the second and third knuckle. I pick him up by his cut and drag him toward the nearest wall. I slide the blade out, uncurl his fingers, then shove the knife in his palm until the tip lodges in the wall. I apply more pressure to sink the knife into the drywall. Blood drips from his hand and down his forearms. That familiar bliss takes over, causing my cock to become half-hard.
Fucking hell, Tongue!
He blows out a painful breath that's mixed with spit.
Shit, that hurts!
Tongue, what are you doing? Tool wraps his fingers around the handle of the knife. I stop him by elbowing him in the gut, then whack him across the cheek when I drive my elbows upward. Get the fuck back, or I swear to God I'll become the monster you all think I am. Everyone forms a circle around me, but it's Daphne whose hand sears the middle of my back.
It's okay, Tongue, I'm okay,
she reassures me. My arm starts to shake from stretching his hand too far back. I won't let go. I don't care how much pain he's in. What the fuck do you want with Daphne? I ask Mercy, curling my lip as the words leave me on a deep gravel. I swear she's safe. I am not trying to hurt her. Then why are you looking at her? You stared at her in the bookstore. You stared at her here. She sent me a message. You're making her uncomfortable. I don't like it when she is uncomfortable.
You've been looking at her? In front of Tongue? You're an idiot. Slingshot chuckles and then pulls out said slingshot and launches a skittle at him.
The red round candy smacks Mercy in the middle of the forehead. You deserved that, he says, pocketing his weapon. He sends me a wink. I got your back, buddy.
You are dumb, Tool says, rubbing his jaw.
I'm staying out of this, Poodle continues to pet Lady. He is sitting on the ground, leaning against the side of the couch with his beloved dog on his lap. She looks familiar, okay? That's all. That's why, Mercy says quickly, grunting through the pain. I grab the handle of the knife and twist. His screams send a pleasurable stroke down my spine, and I shiver. Why?
I don't know you,
Daphne says so softly I can hardly hear her.
I swear, Tongue, I don't know him. I've only seen him around here.
I know, Comet, I don't doubt that. I twist the handle again. His knees buckle, but the knife keeps him nailed to the wall, and the gravity tugging against his flesh is used against him. More skin tears and more blood pours. So, why?
She looks like someone I used to know, okay?